Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's time for the Border Patrol Fast Break. Let's start off with Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com. Missouri. Hello, Gabe DeArmond. How are you?
Not bad. What's up, guys?
You tell me what's up.
Nothing.
No.
You know, Friday morning.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye. Nope. All right, then. Does anyone ever ask you about Michael Porter Jr.?
Never. Not at the gym, not at the grocery store, not by text, not should they come to the game. I haven't been asked about him, and I mean, not this morning, so you guys are the first this morning.
They got Michael Porter Jr. Michael Porter! I'm getting tickets.
Has anybody ever tweet at you using all caps right around game time?
Some guy that, like, I don't know, renamed his Twitter account after Michael's brother, I think, does that a lot.
That would be Stephen St. Jonte, who is
yeah, that guy.
Active tweeter.
He seems kind of weird.
No, there's no seams. He is. Instead of tweeting at you, how about this? Do you think Michael Porter Jr. will play tomorrow?
I mean, if I had to guess, I'd say yes, but this thing changes every day. you know, who knows? Anybody, the only people that really know, probably live in his house, and I'm not sure those people know for sure at this point. I mean, you know, I think Konzo told you guys before he told anybody else, hey, if he feels good, he'll play, which it kind of to me was a shift in that it indicates, hey, this is pretty much Mike's call at this point. Like, we think after a couple more practices, he'll be able to go, but it's really up to him and how he feels. And so ball's in his court, and I would assume that means he'll play. Everything I've heard all year is that he really wants to play when he's able to. So I wouldn't see him saying no, but you never know how he's going to feel tomorrow morning.
Whose decision is it, do you really think? Because like you said, Konzo on this show said it's my first and foremost, it's Mike, how do you feel? He has to answer that question first, and if he feels good, Konzo said it's his decision. Do you believe that? Because there are some people that say it's neither one of their decisions. It's actually the family's decision, and they decide. Where do you think the truth lies?
Well, I mean, it's everybody's decision. Look, I mean, if that's your kid and he's got – I mean, I don't know what NBA contracts are, but when you include the shoe deal Michael's going to get, he's probably sitting on $40 million in a few months. So, yes, I would fully – it would be poor parenting for them not to be involved in the decision. But again, every indication I have is if Michael says he can play and the doctors say he can play, his parents aren't going to step in and tell him he can't. You know, so there's a lot of people involved in this, and the true answer is everybody gets a say. I mean, if Michael goes and says I can't play, then they're not going to play him. But if he says he can play and the doctors tell Konzo we feel good, there's not a chance that he gets hurt again, and Konzo says he can help the team, then he's going to play. But all those things obviously have to happen.
Do you think the circumstance of the game will make any difference in that call whatsoever?
No. I really don't. I listened to the podcast you guys did with DeCourcy, and I think everybody's on the same page with Missouri. They're probably, maybe even almost definitely in the tournament, regardless of what happens. I mean, I think because there are enough teams below them and other teams are going to lose, I think they could lose tomorrow and lose Thursday in the SEC tournament and still get in. Now, they might be in Dayton, which would wreck my week, so I hope that doesn't happen. But I think they're in. So I don't think this is a situation where you're going, okay, if we get into it and we need a couple baskets and we're real close, we're going to put Mike in there and win the game. I don't think that's the situation. I also wonder – I don't think that Konzo Martin approaches it and thinks he's necessarily the difference between me winning and losing tomorrow. I don't think any of us know what to expect out of the kid if he does play.
One kid named Porter could be the difference between winning and losing, and that's Jonte Porter, and he may have been the difference when Vanderbilt started to hit shots late in the second half. He answered every one of them and put the team on his back. If he has the confidence and he's hitting shots like that, now if he starts to peak, I mean, Mizzou could beat Arkansas. Mizzou could have a hell of a run in both tournaments if that's the Jonte Porter we're going to see now. How impressed were you with his performance against Vanderbilt?
That was, and I don't know, Stephen, if you remember one. I can't off the top of my head. I think it was the best game of Missouri players played in the SEC. You know, I know there have been, Jabari Brown had 30 a couple times, but just all around, it wasn't just the 24 points, but he had 7 rebounds, 6 assists. Missouri's never had a triple-double. If Jonte sticks around, he's the kind of player who could get a triple-double, I think, and that was a very impressive game. Jonte is a better shooter than he's been most of this year. Now, he's not a 90% shooter like he was against Vanderbilt, but he is a better shooter than I think he's been most of this season. And, you know, if he can hit some shots, that really opens up a lot of things. They played through him, and then all of a sudden Jordan Barnett had wide-open shots that he was knocking down, and they shoot 53% from three-point range. I mean, that second half was the best of Missouri. And now you also have to understand that's the best possible matchup for both for Missouri and for Jonte Porter in this league. Vanderbilt doesn't have any big guys, and they're not very good on defense. So Missouri went and did what a tournament team should do. To think they're going to be able to do that against Arkansas with Jalen Barford and Daryl Macon outside and then Daniel Gafford in the middle is probably a little bit unrealistic. But they went and did what they should have done. And now the next step for Jonte is, okay, we've seen you play really well before. We haven't seen you play really well for 2 or 3, 4 games in a row. So that's the next step.
Okay, so finally, let's talk about the game itself against Arkansas. You would think that would be an awful matchup for Mizzou the way Auburn was a bad matchup for Mizzou. But they went down there and had the ball in their hands at the end of the game in Fayetteville with a chance to win. They didn't get it done.
Yeah.
But after digging themselves a big, big hole, they came back and played a good second half. And so you tell me what you think. What's more powerful? Mizzou struggles against the press and against pressure, or Arkansas and a Mike Anderson team not always being very good on the road?
Yeah, but this year, I mean, they are 3-5 in the league on the road. They just won at Alabama. Now, Alabama appears to be in a tailspin that I think is going to knock them out of the NCAA tournament. But still, that's a good win to go down to Tuscaloosa. Arkansas isn't a great matchup, but like you said, I mean, Missouri had a 5-point lead in that game with 2 minutes left. If they don't get called for two just mind-numbing, terrible offensive illegal screens, they win that game. Should certainly have beaten Arkansas the first time around. I think it's going to be pretty nuts in that arena tomorrow, especially, I mean, look, you got Cassius Robertson and Jordan Barnett senior day. They've been your two best players all year. If at the first TV timeout, Michael Porter Jr. goes to the scorer's table, I mean, the roof is going to come off that place. I think it's a game Missouri wins, but like you said, it's not a great matchup. Arkansas has been playing really well, and by the way, they're really playing for something. If they win tomorrow, they get a double bye and finish in the top four in the SEC. If they lose tomorrow, in all likelihood, they tumble to sixth or seventh, and they're playing on Thursday in the SEC tournament. So Arkansas's got a lot on the line, too. I think it should be a really good competitive game, but I don't think, like, it doesn't kill either one of them to lose. I think both of those teams are in the turn.
Gabe DeArmond, your prediction, who wins?
Oh, I haven't done my prediction for the site yet, but I'll probably pick Missouri. You go with the home team. I think Missouri's going to have a lot of emotion on their side coming off the Vandy win. I think they'll get it done.
I will see you tomorrow, Gabe DeArmond.
Sounds good. Have fun.
You sound excited. That's Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com, who joins us every week. And really, only the phone can contain his excitement for being on this show. Now let's go to Mr. Stan Weber.
Kansas State.
Stan, are you excited to be on the show?
I am excited to be on the show, but I will say to you, though, I know you've got a great producer back there, but if you guys would like, I'll give my time to Herm Edwards.
Well, I think I'll give my time to Herm Edwards, Stan.
Yeah, it was great listening to Herm yesterday, so awesome radio. Good job, guys.
We were so excited. Nate smacked me right in the mouth when the interview was over, which was, you know what, it was good for me. So let's talk K-State basketball. Back-to-back road losses and now a home game against Baylor. For you, where do they sit right now as far as the NCAA tournament, in your opinion?
I believe that they win one game down the stretch, and it'd be good to get it done tomorrow. They'll be in the NCAA tournament. Doesn't mean they're not going to be in the NCAA tournament, but I will have a lot of fear and not a ton of confidence sitting there on Selection Sunday if they were in a situation where they happen to lose to Baylor and then lose the first game in the Big 12 tournament. It'll be a tough opponent, likely TCU, that you've got to play in the Big 12 tournament. So I just think they need one to win one of those two games to make it, and tomorrow's your best chance. You're at home, and you just got to get the work done tomorrow. That's the way you have to have the mentality. So I think K-State is an NCAA tournament team, but I do think they need one more win to prove it.
So one of the issues that that I've seen brought up by some folks during these couple of losses by K-State is that since coming back from injury, Kamau Stokes has not played particularly well, and Cartier Jada's numbers have kind of dropped as well. Almost like it seems like it's difficult for both guys to figure out where they fit or what exactly their role is now that they're both available to play. How do you think Bruce Weber handles that? How big of an issue do you think that really is?
Well, a lot of times we want to intertwine the two almost to create a conflict type of situation. It's hard for both of them to get their minutes and be happy. I don't think that's the situation at all. But you do, as we study this Michael Porter Jr. reentry and things, you just got to think about what Kamau Stokes is going through. When you're an athlete and you've been injured, and you come back, there are some ups and downs. And sometimes adrenaline right at first gets you off to a good start. And I thought Kamau came out strong and played more minutes than they expected him to and looked more healthy. But a lot of times when you're coming back from injury, and I've done it before, then you kind of hit a wall. And you realize, I'm not 100%. And some of the moves you want to make, you can't make. And then you start questioning your confidence, and people are trying to figure things out. And I think that's where we are with Kamau Stokes right now. He's struggling very much. In his last three games, I think he's got 2 total points, maybe no assists, and 3, 4, and 3 equals 10 turnovers. So Kamau's really struggled recently, and I think it's probably affecting his confidence. His shot's a little bit off, and that's just part of coming back. When you go to the other side, Cartier Jada, he comes in, and he did a great job to start out. No one expected him to play that well. He's very strong, taller than people think, really adept with his left hand, and lefties seem to be able to use their opposite hand better. So he's good going with his right, driving to the basket. He's hit some big 3-point shots. He's done a very nice job. But when you're a new starter, what do opponents do? Great coaches in the Big 12 Conference, they figure you out and make it harder on you. And it's just part of the development. And he's doing it on big center stage because he's the starting point guard. So is it really anything to do with Kamau Stokes that affects Cartier Jada? I don't think so. I just think that he's not going to play a perfect game every time, and defenses are going to figure him out and make him work harder and do things that he doesn't feel as comfortable with. So I think they're each on their own individual plane. No correlation between the two, but they're both hitting some lulls, and in the last game, it definitely affected K-State. There was just no production from the point guard position, and what was Bruce Weber to do? Which one was he going to play? Because Kamau was struggling, and Cartier Jada didn't give K-State anything either. And it's just unfortunate when Dean Wade played so great, Barry Brown played so great, K-State led 2:49 left in the game by 1 point, and they didn't finish it out. So it was a missed opportunity. I don't expect it to happen in the next game. I think Jada will bounce back. But Kamau Stokes, I do think that K-State ought to just redefine what he needs to do right now and just say, give us 10 minutes. You don't need to play 20 or 25 minutes. Just give us 10 minutes. Come out and help us out and do your thing. Don't turn over the basketball and give us some minutes and you'll be fine. And I think his confidence could kick back in, but he needs to make a couple shots. But he doesn't need to force things, be down on himself. Don't compare yourself to the healthy Kamau Stokes. And that's one of the dangers about bringing guys back, is that they want to be what they were, and maybe they're not 100% healthy until they get an off season. And how do they deal with that? Do they get mad at themselves? And I think Kamau's battling all of that, just beating himself up a little bit, which affects his play.
All right, Stan, first time around, K-State beat Baylor in Waco 90-83. What do you like about this matchup tomorrow for K-State?
Well, the matchup against Baylor is defined by Dean Wade because Baylor plays a zone that's not a packed-in zone. They don't pack it in and say, can you hit the three ball? They spread things out, cause havoc, don't give you any good looks, and try to stop a little bit of everything with their length. But when you beat them, you go through the seams. You get the ball near the free throw line, the elbow. You work along the baseline. You got to get the ball where you can make mid-range shots. Make good passes, big to big. Well, guess who's the best? Maybe in the country, but definitely in the Big 12 at doing that. That's Dean Wade. He caught the ball against Baylor 15 feet from the basket in the middle of the zone turn and ripped it before they knew what happened. Big guy jumps up, comes off the basket. He passes the ball over, and K-State gets a dunk. It's one of the games where the Wildcats got double figures from McCall Maywing because of Dean Wade's great passing. And, in fact, Baylor just said, forget this. We're not playing zone anymore. K-State got them out of the zone so fast because Dean Wade killed them. And then K-State also played well against their man-to-man and scored 90 points. It was one of the K-State's best games. There's a ton of pressure on Dean Wade tomorrow for the Wildcats. If Baylor's allowed to play the zone like they like to, they'll cause some havoc. And K-State's been very weak recently in the three-point shots. Do you realize in the last three games, K-State's made at most 4 3-pointers? That doesn't win in college basketball very often. So you cannot allow them to force you to shoot the three. K-State can be in trouble. It's getting it to the seams, to Dean Wade. And if he plays like normal, that's bad news for Baylor.
All right, Stan, K-State gets the win tomorrow?
Boy, you know, it's going to be close. K-State has not been a great home team. They have not dominated at home. But I think there's a sense of urgency. I think it's a very even game. I'll give a slight edge to the Wildcats, but it's going to be a good game. Baylor, what do you look at them? Do you say, is this a team that's won only 2 road games all year? Or is it the team that's won 2 of their last 3 road games? So they've only won 2, but they've done the job recently. Baylor's playing a lot better. K-State's going to have to up their play. Dean Wade, Barry Brown, and some point guard help, I think, will give the Wildcats just enough to win tomorrow.
Thank you very much, Stan Weber. We will talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
That's Stan Weber talking K-State. Now, let's go to Jesse Newell with the Kansas City Star. Kansas! Hello there, Jesse. How are you?
Good, Stephen. How about you?
Doing very well. Okay, let's get into this matchup with Oklahoma State. The Big 12 title is already won, and now they have a road game against the Cowboys. Obviously a very important game for Oklahoma State. And for Kansas, the question is, if they were to lose this game and then maybe lose right away in the Big 12 tournament like they did last year, would that cost them a number one seed, or are they safe as a number one seed?
It's a good question, and it's probably one that would be better if we had a committee member on. But, you know, from that first bracket reveal, when you looked at it and saw kind of what the committee looks for and what they hold very important, you would say that it's those quadrant one wins that you're talking about, the kind of top wins, the top wins against quality opponents. And as of yesterday, KU is number one in the nation in quadrant one wins and number one in the nation in quadrant one plus quadrant two wins. So I think when you look at it from that perspective, I'm not saying it's right, I'm not saying it's wrong, I'm saying it's basically what the committee does, that it's going to be pretty difficult to move KU down just because of all those wins that they have. And if that's what they deem as what you need to be a high seed, then KU probably should be that. Now, here's the other side of it, which is, if Bill Self is truthful in saying that he doesn't really care about location and where KU plays its games in the regional, whether it's Omaha or Los Angeles, it's kind of what he talked about yesterday, then I'm not sure the one seed matters all that much, because if you talk about it, okay, if you're the final one seed playing the first two seed, or you're the first two seed playing the final one seed, if you kind of look down the road, the Elite Eight game for you is going to be basically the same. It's going to be two teams that really probably aren't close to home, that at some sort of East or Midwest team playing out way out in L.A. So it might not matter that much for KU, but you know Bill Self. He's competitive as heck. It's what's made him a Hall of Fame coach, and so he's going to play this one to win it. And don't expect the Jayhawks to rest our guys too much tomorrow just because Bill Self wants to win every single game he plays.
I think the biggest difference between the one and two seed is just that, at least historically, the one seed is a 100% chance of going through to the next round, so you take that. But we'll worry about that later. You mentioned it. He's going to go play this game down in Stillwater, Oklahoma, and try to win it. Do you think that's what the right word is? Is that a controversial decision in any way, shape, or form?
Maybe controversial is too strong, but I think it's a decision. You know, it's not one that he really, I think, takes much into account, but I think it definitely is one. to be honest, I'm probably more interested next week in what happens with Kansas. And again, I don't think Bill Self will change things up. I don't think he'll play anything differently. But I think the one person that you look at, now, he's played a lot of guys a lot of minutes this year. We all know that. We can look at the box score. We know that they don't have much of a rotation. The one guy I'm wondered about is Devontae Graham.
Right.
Because if Devontae Graham, you know, knock on wood for KU fans, like if he fell down and grabbed his knee at any point in any of the rest of the games before March Madness, I mean, what is this Kansas team? What is it then? You know, how do they play? What happens, you know? And not only that, the guy's played 40 minutes in, I believe it's 11 of his last 12 games. And then you look at that, you combine all that with, if KU kept winning, you would play back-to-back-to-back at the Big 12 tournament. I mean, if you look at the NBA, CBA, they forbid back-to-back-to-back games because of the player's health and the player's safety. And so this is sort of almost an unsafe situation that you put yourself in to try to win this kind of fictitious trophy that doesn't mean anything at the end of the day. So for this one game, I don't think there's really much problem. I mean, you could probably limit his minutes and get him a little bit more rest. That might not be a horrible thing to do, but you know, playing him one game and giving him a few days off, that's probably not as bad. Where I'm interested in is for them, if they go back-to-back-to-back with a guy who's already played 40 minutes, 11 of his last 12 games, who we already know is the most valuable player on Kansas roster. If he does that with Devontae Graham, then the word controversial might be something we could use and something maybe a little more step up from what might happen this weekend against Oklahoma State.
Okay, Bill Self, I believe, has never been swept in a regular season by an opponent in the Big 12. Is that correct?
Yeah, 101 series so far, and he's never been swept in the regular season.
Do you think that's a motivating factor for him at all? Do you think he even cares about that? Because, that's one of the reasons that they would want to win this game.
Oh God, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, he's competitive. I tell this story all the time, and you guys have probably heard me say it before, but, I remember before their trip to France and Switzerland 5 years ago, and I was talking with Bill before they left on the trip, and I said, hey, are you trying to win these games, or are you just trying to get guys in? Oh, no, just trying to get guys in. It's an exhibition. Doesn't matter. And literally 3 days later, we're over in Switzerland. There's 50 people there, you know, all KU fans or whatever. And one of his guys got in foul trouble early on, controversial call, and he's yelling at this official who is from Switzerland who does not understand his language, you know, red-faced, going at him. And I'm just like, that's Bill Self. I mean, Bill Self is a Hall of Fame coach because at this garbage game in the middle of the summer that means nothing in Switzerland, he is red-faced screaming at officials because he wants to win the darn game. And so he is competitive to a fault. And so, yeah, I think this absolutely means something for him. Now, he made a good point yesterday. Does it mean something to Malik Newman? Does it mean something to little Gerald Vick? I don't know. It probably means something to Devontae Graham and a guy like that who wants to be prideful and not have these things end on his watch. But I think it absolutely means something to Bill Self. I think that's part of the reason you'll see KU really try to play to win when they take the court tomorrow.
Now, they lost that game at home, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that was the game after which we all stood there and Bill Self basically said, I'm making lineup changes, called out the effort of his players, specifically Doak and LeGerald Vick, and saying that basically they're not trying hard enough. I got to think that's a motivating factor for this team as well. I mean, this is the game, right, where the team basically got called out onto the carpet by their head coach.
Yeah, it could be. And you've seen KU kind of go a couple different ways since then. And I thought really the turning point in the season was after the Baylor loss, where Bill, he had been very critical of Malik Newman. He'd taken him out of the starting lineup, and he was still kind of tinkering, like you talked about, with the lineups and putting Mitch Lightfoot in there more minutes, and said he was tired of playing guys that didn't give full effort. And what happened after that was he was asked kind of 2 days later at a media session, you know, what he was going to do. And he said, look, the way this team has played best is when those five starters have played their best together. So I'm going to go back to that. I'm going to put my faith behind my guys in that, you know, and see how they do. And from there, Malik Newman took off. LeGerald Vick had three good games in a row. And this KU team hasn't lost since. And so, yeah, I think KU will want to show that it's better than it showed in Lawrence. I mean, that was really kind of the one loss. KU lost a lot of games this year, but a 13-point favorite at home in previous years, you know, you mark it as a W. You sharpie it in, and there's no really thought about it. Even if it's 2 points or 3 points, it's not a game that KU usually loses, and, you know, the Jayhawks got dominated. So I think there will be some sort of motivating factor in that instance where you don't want this team to think that they're better than you when you played so poorly at home. But, no, I think you're absolutely right that those guys getting called out, it was part of the growth process, but I think Bill Self also deserves credit because he reeled it in right when he needed to. And KU's starting five right now has played at a really high level. here over the last five games.
Have you thought about who's going to be on your All Big 12 first team?
You know, I don't actually have a vote, or if I do, I usually don't take advantage of it. But, you know, we were talking about that yesterday, and I think the top four-ish are pretty easy if you look at Graham, you look at Young, you look at Carter, you look at Keenan Evans, and then that fifth spot is a little bit more tricky. For me, at least, you know, Bamba and Dean Wade, I think, are both right there, and you could make legitimate arguments for each one, and I don't think you'd go wrong with either one of those. But it's been obviously a point guard dominated league, so I think those point guards right off the top would easily make my list, and then the fifth one would be kind of tough to decide. But, you know, the way Dean Wade played against KU this year, and we've seen kind of become, you know, a Perry Ellis type player, make shots in mid range, really be a defensive nightmare, or an offensive nightmare, and then, you know, pick up his play defensively as well over the past few years, that's great. And then Bamba's been inconsistent offensively, but, you know, such a crazy shot blocker and things he can do inside. So I think either one of those two on the final spot would be good. But, yeah, this has been a crazy league for point guards. There's no doubt about that.
I'd go with Dean Wade. Nate?
I think I'd go with Dean Wade as well. Maybe the fact that Bamba's been injured here at the end of the season would tip me in Dean Wade's favor. I don't know. So I'd have to go back because for some reason I thought when I was going through mine I had both Wade and Bamba on my
Well, who don't you like from Jesse's?
You had Young, Graham. Who was the third?
Carter and Keenan Evans.
Okay. I don't know if the injury to Keenan Evans takes him off. I mean, he was definitely first team. You know, as in terms of the way he was playing. I don't know. That is tough. I guess I'd go Dean Wade over Bamba at this point.
Correct. That's the right answer. All right, Jesse, thank you very much for the time. He wanted to disagree with you, but he just couldn't do it. Jesse,
it's tough, guys. Right. I know. I mean, being right all the time,
right.
It's got to be difficult to try to disagree with.
Right. He did his best.
He just couldn't
pull the trigger on that one. Thank you very much, Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star.
I mean, I guess if you're doing your, you know, like Mike DeCourcy said, if you're doing your first team All Big 12 or All American, he doesn't go by position, like trying to find one guy at each position. So then you could go with four guards, and if the four best players in the league are guards, Bamba's the best defensive player in the league, I think, in terms of an interior presence. But, I mean, there's a part of me that almost doesn't want to put Trae Young in first team All Big 12, which seems like the dumbest thing ever when you look at his offensive stats. But, I mean, I like him. He seems like a good, likable guy, and I think he's going to be a really good player, but he plays no defense whatsoever. He's got some steals. I think he's ranked fairly highly in steals. But
well, you really don't like him.
I just
you want him on your first team.
And watching him on those teams, I mean, like he just doesn't guard.
We'll be right back after this on WHB.